Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, welcome to the Michaud Mission, two men, one podcast, every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. the Bat Tribble. And as always, I'm joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, it is December the 12th.
Yes, it is.
Which means we are in the merry month of December, celebrating all types of holiday films. And tonight, it's Vincent's turn to select our film to review.
Yes,
and he is select... a rare occasion for Vince to select a recent release.
Yeah.
But it's one that has been on the lips of people for weeks now since it dropped on Amazon Prime. That is Eddie Murphy, Tracy Ellis Ross leading a huge cast in Candy Cane Lane.
Yes.
But first, we want to say hello to each and every one of you out there who are watching as we stream live from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace, as we stream to YouTube and to Facebook and to all points north, south, east, and west, and to everyone out there in the chat.
Good evening, one and all.
Vincent, how are you doing, my friend?
I am fine.
Yeah,
I am fine.
Doing good?
Yeah, getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah.
Running around, so, you know, good running around. I'm fine.
I'm doing the same. I actually will be this weekend taking a trip to Pittsburgh for a long overdue visit with my daughter and my grandson.
Very nice. Very nice. I have an aunt who lives in Pittsburgh. So I like Pittsburgh.
I've never been.
I like Pittsburgh a lot.
I've never been. Yeah. So she's promised.
Good comic shops.
Oh, really?
Yeah, good comic shops.
Any one come to mind?
I can't think of the name of the one that I'm, but I'll tell you offline. But if I remember, and in full disclosure, I haven't been to Pittsburgh in probably 5 or 6 years.
I've never been.
Yeah,
so.
But what I do remember is it had the components of those wonderful kind of Rust Belt cities where the real estate wasn't as crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So that comic shops could have these big shops.
So they'd be nice size.
Yeah.
Stuff with a lot of back issues.
Exactly.
That's what you love.
Exactly. So
back issue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that big time. We are going to get into our show, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. our review of Candy Cane Lane. But first, we want to catch up on some of the news and some of the unfortunate recent passings.
Yeah,
that have had quite a number. You know, they always say that when the celebrities go, they go in threes.
Yes.
And they went in threes as far as in the world of the Michaud Mission. We'll start with the one that is probably, probably hasn't touched on the Michaud Mission actually that much. And that's Ryan O'Neal.
Yeah.
Passed away like at 82 years old, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a real surprise. I like Ryan O'Neal when I've seen him.
Sure.
But he always looked like, like maybe the Mirror Universe Robert Redford, you know?
I have to say Ryan O'Neal was one of those actors that I think I knew him more because of his personal life.
Oh,
and his longtime relationship with Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
Than I did his actual work.
Well,
I know he was in Love Story.
He's in Love Story, and he was the star of Paper Moon.
Right, right. And he's Tatum. Right. He's Tatum's dad.
With his Tatum O'Neal.
Tatum O'Neal's it. But yeah. Yeah.
And then he's married to Farrah Fawcett.
Right, right.
Yeah, you're right. Well.
It's a shame.
It's a shame. Sorry.
Always a shame. Any passing diminishes us.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. He was 82 years old, but mm-hmm. not to be outdone. One of the greats of sitcom history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Norman Lear.
Yeah. An actual monument.
Yes.
Like you're saying, one of the greats. He's like one of the, not even one of the.
He may
I would
be
say he's the architect.
He may be
the, of modern comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Passed away at the age of 101 years old.
Absolutely.
And when Vince says that he is the architect, ladies and gentlemen, not mincing words, the man, you know, was the brain behind All in the Family, which many consider one of the greatest sitcom and one of the greatest television shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all time. Then he was the brains behind one of the funniest TV shows of all time, Sanford and Son.
Yeah, my all-time favorite show.
And then we're not even talking about all of the sequels that came from All in the Family.
Yeah.
Maude, the Jeffersons. There was Maude, Good Times.
Good Times.
Tons of, I mean, yeah. The, and this was the architect.
Why did I just forget? This is it. This is it.
Oh, One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time.
I forgot about One Day at a Time. Yeah, that was the other thing. Yeah, at one time, he probably had like about six shows on air at one time.
Sure, and he certainly, again, altered the speed and the tone of sitcoms.
He did.
Like if you
and the language
which is really kind of captures everything that I'm saying. Like when you look at the history of sitcoms, there really is a marked difference in what sitcoms looked, sounded, as you said, the language before and after Norman Lear.
Yep. Yep.
And a lot of what we talk about now with sitcoms is kind of built on the foundation that he set up. I mean, after Norman Lear, would you go to Brandon Tartikoff? Like, is there anyone?
Brandon Tartikoff, maybe James Burrows, the guy who did Cheers, and then thus was a producer on Frasier.
Here's the thing about, here's the thing about Cheers and Taxi. Always felt like they were their own things.
Well, I mean, but
like I can't think of sitcoms that they influence, like that you could look like maybe Night Court.
I mean,
but even Night Court.
I mean, we've already jumped off Norman Lear, but considering the ensemble that those shows were.
Sure.
You could say Night Court presented an ensemble afterwards. Like ensemble, you could almost. I think the breadcrumbs from Cheers to something like Friends are right there. Because Friends, while it was just four, it was still an ensemble.
Right.
It was an ensemble star cast. Cheers actually morphed into an ensemble.
Right.
And was able to continue being such a great, great show.
Right.
And Frasier, while built around one particular character, was still very much, it was all about the ensemble.
Right.
Taxi was built around one character. It was really built around Judd Hirsch, but it then became about the ensemble.
Besides, I'm talking about just sort of the way it shot, the actual speed of the sitcom.
Yeah, like, I mean, it inspired like shows like, jokes. We said like Night Court, which then begets Spin City. You know, so I think it definitely did.
Okay,
It influenced.
And that would be before Brandon Tartikoff.
No, Brandon Tartikoff probably is before them.
Right. Okay.
Brandon Tartikoff is probably that midpoint between Norman Lear and whatever comes in the wake of the Cosby Show.
Right.
Tartikoff
is also Family Ties, though, right?
He is. Another name in sitcoms that just came to me and worth definitely putting in this this conversation is Gary Marshall. Because he did Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy.
Yeah. But again, I'm thinking about, like, again, I'm not talking about things that they actually created necessarily.
No, but the inspiration.
The wave that followed them.
Yeah,
But you're right, Gary Marshall, I mean, even something like Too Close for Comfort or Bosom Buddies had that Gary. And Like Perfect Strangers. Like they
there
all.
There you may be talking about the Brandon Tartikoff influence.
They felt like Gary Marshall shows to me.
Really?
And I don't necessarily have the precise language why. But like you look at things. But Norman Lear, like Norman,
they all get something from, just the, said, and all, from right, Norman.
They would all bow to Norman Lear. Yeah. And it is a colossal loss. I was saying before we started, I am contractually bound whenever Norman Lear comes up to talk about Eric Monty,
mm-hmm.
who wrote Coolie High and had a pretty acrimonious falling out with Norman Lear and accused Norman Lear of stealing ideas
mm-hmm.
from him for the Jeffersons, for Sanford and Son, for Good Times.
Yeah.
Famously, and you know, I apologize. I know Norman Lear, there was something with his production company, I think, that connected him to What's Happening. But What's Happening famously had to acknowledge Eric Monty as a creator after a lawsuit. And Eric Monty always said that he was blacklisted because of his falling out with Norman Lear. Norman Lear always denied all of it.
He did.
But I did always kind of wonder where good, like how Good Times and the Jeffersons came out of Norman Lear. Like he a genius, but. Huh.
Well, the one thing I do know about Norman Lear is that while he was a writer,
mm-hmm.
he was, and he even said this, he was a producer first.
Sure.
So he would develop writing rooms. So I don't think Norman Lear would ever say that
it came out of him.
It came out of him.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he was the one that stirred the ship and made right. it happen. You know?
Eric Monty would say he was the one actually
and
laying down the map and. But regardless, it is a colossal loss.
Yeah.
It is a colossal loss. And
it
will be missed.
He will be.
Lived a good life.
He certainly did.
Lived a good life. And Eric Monty stuff aside, it seems like he was a pretty good dude.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he was a good man. So.
And another loss, and this is maybe definitely a little closer.
Yes.
To the Michelle Mission, ladies and gentlemen, is the loss at 87 years young of mm-hmm. one David McKnight.
Oh, and who was that?
Now, this is a name that some of you may recognize. He had a pretty prolific career in television in the 70s and 80s, appearing on Kojak,
mm-hmm.
Hill Street Blues, mm-hmm. The Incredible Hulk,
mm-hmm.
Dynasty.
All right.
Benson.
All right.
L.A. Law,
mm-hmm.
227.
Mm-hmm.
But
No Place Like Home.
He is his big claim to fame were appearing in The Five Heartbeats.
Who did he play in The Five Heartbeats?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I will tell you who he played in Five Heartbeats in a little bit.
Did he play Eddie Kane Sr.?
Give me a moment.
Okay.
But his true claim to fame.
Mm-hmm.
was as the title character in 1976's J.D.'s Revenge.
Yes.
Where he played the deceased hustler who takes over the body of college student Glenn Turman.
Yes.
And goes after the man who murdered him and his sister 30 years earlier. So David McKnight is definitely a name that we want to honor here on the Michelle Mission.
Absolutely.
Now you asked whether or not who was
who did he play in The Five Heartbeats?
No, you know who I think he plays. I think he plays Choir Boy's father.
Like I think he plays the preacher.
He also appeared in Hollywood Shuffle, which is where he met Robert Townsend.
Yeah.
And went on to do work with the man. He also appeared in The Parenthood. Robert Townsend always found time for Mr. McKnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
that's him. Boom. I found it. Because I just looked up the part in The Five Heartbeats where Choir Boy went to get on the bus with The Five Heartbeats. And his father, you can't serve two masters. And he gave him the Bible. And then Choir Boy got on the bus. But then Choir Boy left the Bible near the phone because Choir Boy was chasing the ladies. And remember Choir Boy, he said he had a new stage name. His name was Rock. What was his name? Like Rock Stone?
Yes.
He was very subtle.
Yes. Yes. I remember that.
Yes, he plays Choir Boy Senior. Perhaps Choir Man.
We also have one other name close to the Michaud Mission. Hasn't shown up on the Michaud Mission, and also it's hard pressed whether or not she will or not. But
I was about to say, was she in movies?
Ellen Holly,
yeah,
passed away on December 6th. She is famously known as Carla Gray Hall on the ABC soap opera One Life to Live.
Yeah.
Where she appeared from 1968 to 1980, and then again from 83 to 85. And Ellen Holly is noted as the first African-American to appear on daytime television in a leading role. Mind you, that is the first African-American, not the first African-American woman.
Yeah.
The first African-American
to
appear in a lead role on an American soap opera. As I mentioned, she passed away on December 6th at the tender age of 92 years young.
That's right.
Ellen Holly. And yeah, almost all of her work was on television. As in television, she appeared in a few small films in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Most of it was on television.
Yeah. So rest in peace to her as well.
Most definitely. All right.
All right.
In 1963, in Americus, Georgia, 15 black girls joined a protest.
One for the matinee, please.
Negroes, get your tickets in the back.
We just want tickets to see the show.
Here comes a whole mess of tickets for each and every one of you.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Based on a true story, Push Black presents The Stolen Girls of Americus. Listen and follow on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast.
Let's keep the train moving, ladies and gentlemen.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
And with that, let us get into your emails.
What else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
We have emails, Vincent, and our first one is from Nick Nicholas.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Right in time for the season.
That's right, Saint Nick.
What's up, Len and Vince? My name is Nick, and I am a huge fan of this podcast, A Fellow Missionary.
Oh, good to hear, Nick.
I recently listened to the Harlem Nights episode.
Okay.
And I can see why Vince thinks Harlem Nights is the weakest black film from Eddie Murphy's canon. The writing was subpar and the direction of the movie was okay. It definitely was a vanity project on Eddie's behalf.
Mm-hmm. And that's from his classic work, because it's clearly not his weakest work.
Right. Right.
We'll be discussing that later in the evening.
I have a new top five for both of you called Top Five What Ifs in Black Cinema.
Oh, okay.
Examples are, what if Jacqueline and Marcus from Boomerang actually ended up together despite them being the same person? Or what if Mookie didn't do the right thing? I thought it would be a cool concept to try out and discuss. Happy holidays, brothers. Salute, Nick.
All right.
Top five what ifs in what black if? Cinema?
It's funny because the ones that he named, they've kind of dealt with. If not the what ifs, but kind of what happens afterwards. Did you watch the Boomerang television show?
No.
At all?
No.
Me either. But I know one of the characters was Marcus and... not Jacqueline. What was Halle Berry's character's name? Anyway, one of the characters was their child.
Okay.
And then, you know, the two kind of postscript do the right thing things. One is Red Hook Summer is supposed to take place within
that universe.
That universe.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you remember, but there was a little buzz in the, because it was, remember, it was very lo-fi in the advertising, but they said it was a quasi semi-sequel, and they kind of teased that it would connect somehow. And the only real connection was Mookie shows up at the end of the film in a montage of fathers and sons. And it's Mookie holding a little, you know, a young boy.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is he's wearing a Sal's Pizzeria jersey.
Oh.
So the implication is that Sal rebuilt and Mookie went and worked for him again.
Interesting.
And then the other one, it's been like 2-3 years now. This is a spoiler, y'all. But okay, so if you have plans on watching the She's Gotta Have It television show that was on for 2 or 3 seasons, plug up your ears because I'm about to give you a spoiler. So Anthony Ramos plays Mars Blackman on
the TV series.
On the TV series. She's Gotta Have It.
Mm-hmm.
Mars is the character that Spike Lee played in the movie.
Yes.
She's Gotta Have It. But in the television show, it's modern day. It's just, they've just moved all of the characters to modern day.
So it's the same story, but it's just today's.
Right.
Today's
like the first time. Couple of episodes are basically a remake of She's Gotta Have It set in like 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of spun out from there. Anthony Ramos, again, plays Mars Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show was on for 2 seasons, maybe 3 seasons.
I feel like it was 2, but go ahead.
The last episode or the next to last episode in the last season, Anthony Ramos's character, his Mars Blackman, goes to visit his mother, who is living in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
He visits his mother, and his mother is played by Rosie Perez.
Oh, interesting.
During the conversation, this character played by Rosie Perez, who he just calls Mom, says to him, the man that you think is your father is not actually your father. Your father is a dude that I was messing with named Mookie.
Wow.
And Anthony Ramos is like, Mookie? What is this? And she says, you know, I was so wild and crazy, I didn't even know his government. So that Mars Blackman in She's Gotta Have It, the television series, is canonically the son of Mookie from Do the Right Thing.
Wow. That's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope. That's kind of fly.
Yeah.
That is kind of fly.
So
I almost want to watch the show just so I can see that. I'm not.
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag.
But that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I can't think of any like black cinema what ifs that like I really am that interested in seeing how it played out in my head, you know?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Yeah.
Yeah, not really. Yeah. But I mean, it's a good concept. We'll keep it around. Maybe something. And it, you know, who knows? The missionaries may come up with one.
Of course.
But thank you for the email, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
We got another email from Corey Nicole.
Hey, Corey.
Answering Vincent's question.
Oh, what
question? On AJ Johnson.
Oh, right now. I always got time to talk about AJ Johnson.
Hi, Len and Vince. This is a follow-up email from the last one I sent regarding why AJ Johnson wasn't in Strictly Business.
That's a good question.
According to Dami Davidson, who has a memoir out, believe it or not, and he does, and I read the book.
Actually read it. Yeah.
It's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
Halle Berry was fired by the director of Strictly Business, who was not Kevin Hooks. The original director said they didn't want to cast Halle as Natalie because they were tired of seeing light-skinned black women play love interests in films, which we know Halle Berry is light-skinned. So the other choice was AJ Johnson. But then the original director of Strictly Business was fired and replaced with Kevin Hooks. AJ Johnson was then let go as well, thus Halle Berry getting the role of Natalie. That answers your question.
Wow.
That is Interesting turn of events.
Yeah, behind the scenes kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if on the low, and she probably it had no reason if AJ Johnson maybe harbored a little bit of animosity towards Halle, because that, as far as I know,
you think that's what launched Halle Berry's acting career.
It did. I mean, say what you want about the movie.
No. I think you're.
Well, I think that, to be fair, that, and then she got it. She got a claim for where's the movie where she's with Samuel Jackson? She's a drug.
Oh, Jungle Fever.
Jungle Fever.
Spike Lee. Yeah.
So she got a claim for that. Then she's a lead in this. I don't remember which comes first, but I think that kind of like gets her started. And that certainly seems, at least as, if I remember AJ Johnson's filmography, the closest she came to an opportunity.
I'm well versed in AJ Johnson's filmography, actually. After a House Party, and then Kid and Play couldn't get her in House Party too, because Kid and Play famously got Full Force, and I think Tisha Campbell and Martin Lawrence rehired.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they made House Party 2, I think they wanted to scrap the whole cast.
Except
Kid and Play. So after House Party, I believe she doesn't show up again until The Inkwell.
Wow. Because that's a nice little stretch. The Inkwell is like the 90s. House Party is the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the late 80s.
Late 80s, but still.
I was about to say, it can't be that hard to pull her up her filmography. Because, you know, it's like House Party, Inkwell, and then, you know, of course, her magnum opus, Baby Boy.
Baby Boy. Let's see.
What else is she in besides those three?
So films? She does School Days in 1990.
Right, she's in School Days. That's right.
She doesn't know. She does. Yeah, she does School Days in 88, House Party in 90. And then, she doesn't show up again. Boy, you know you're AJ Johnson.
Look, man.
Does TV movies, but she doesn't show up in the films until 94 in The Inkwell.
Look.
And then, after The Inkwell, she doesn't show up again until 1998.
In?
High Freak, F-R-E-A-K, Quincy.
I don't even know what that is. Yeah.
She's DJ Venom in it.
Lord.
You may want to, Freak. You may want to go look that up.
Look.
You know? I'm just saying.
And then Baby Boy.
And then Baby Boy and Blacklisted.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's absolutely.
And Inkwell Inkwell is just ridiculous. That's like Vanessa Bell Calloway, Phyllis Dickney.
Now, in her defense, in 93 from 95, because I'm looking here, she is in the main cast of a TV series, Sirens.
I vaguely remember that. That was about the singers.
I don't remember this. Sirens focus on the work and lives of three rookie female police officers.
What am I thinking about?
She, which stars Jane Brooke, Adrian Joy Johnson, which is AJ, and Liza Snyder.
Okay.
Despite receiving an Emmy nomination, the series was canceled by ABC after 13 episodes, but was picked up in syndication the following year with 22 episodes being produced and aired. The syndicated had a slightly different cast, but AJ Johnson did reprise her role. Oh, wow. That's
interesting. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, shout out to AJ Johnson.
Yes.
I hope she's doing well.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's like a life coach, I think, now.
Yeah, and a fitness trainer.
Yeah.
All right. Corey continues in her email, can't wait to hear the review of Candy Cane Lane.
Oh, you're going to hear.
With Eddie Murphy. I was going to say this movie is somewhat of a boomerang reunion with Eddie, Reggie Hudlin as the director, and an appearance by one David Alan Greer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it definitely has been pointed out by others.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you, Corey Nicole.
Thank you
for your
Corey
email.
Nicole.
And we got one last email.
Okay.
This is from Michael Sykes.
Hey, what's up, Michael?
Movies that he is requesting to add to the list.
Okay. What we got?
Let's see what's on
always
your
like
list.
That.
Hey, Len. Hey, Vincent. This is Michael Sykes, your fan. I am so excited to see your review about Friday After Next. I can't wait. that's not even just that till next week.
Yeah.
Just hold your horses. Yeah. It's next week.
Merry Christmas.
I guess he knows he's going to be out of town next week. So he sent us the email.
Right.
A week
earlier.
I also have some great movies, maybe that I can recommend that you perhaps have never heard of.
Please do.
Like Honey Dripper, which stars Danny Glover, Charles Dutton, and Bondi Curtis Hall. You know this film?
I've heard of this film.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Period piece, real prestige-y.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Had a short run, yeah.
Phantom Punch, featuring Ving Rhames and directed by Robert Townsend.
I'm not familiar with that at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Once in the Life, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Iman Walker, and Gregory Hines.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that.
This is one we know and has been shortlisted, Gang Related with Tupac.
Yes. Because that's Carl directed Devil in a Blue Dress.
Oh, Carl Franklin?
Yeah, I think that's Carl Franklin.
Yeah. Obstacles, starring E-40 and Brian Hooks.
Okay.
One Day. Foolish, starring Eddie Griffin and Master P.
Yeah, I'm never going to pick that.
One Day. Stomp the Yard.
Yes, of course, Stomp the Yard. Of course, Stomp the Yard. Who doesn't want to watch a movie about 45-year-old actors playing college students? Steppin'. Don't you know? They stomp in the yard. For fraternity supremacy through steppin'.
The Obama Effect.
Oh, what's that? Who's that? Is that a film?
Yeah. But I don't think it wasn't a feature film.
Though. Right. Okay. I thought that was maybe a documentary. Okay.
Caught Up.
Yeah.
And Ice-T and Charles Dutton and Ernest Dickerson's Surviving the Game.
That is on my shortlist.
That's been shortlisted.
Yeah, that's on my shortlist. I actually forgot Ernest Dickerson directed that.
Yeah.
That has gotten even shorter on my list.
I seem to remember really kind of liking it.
Me too. Yeah. Because I thought, and I remember, well, now I do remember Ernest Dickerson talking about basically casting Charles Dutton in the lead role of the dudes hunting.
Right.
The dude, because otherwise you'd have had a bunch of white dudes hunting a black guy and just the politics of it. But they said having Charles Dutton in there, it complicates it.
And it does.
It's kind of like Ernie Hudson plays a great white hunter in Congo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take your time with these. It's just something to add to y'all. Happy holidays list. Your fan, Michael Sykes.
Thank you, Michael. Those are good ones.
Those are very good ones.
Those are nice. I forgot about some of those.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We appreciate that, Michael.
Absolutely.
Just to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, as we mentioned before, next week, or Michael mentioned, we're going to be reviewing Friday After Next.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we are going to shut the show down for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take 2 weeks off at the end of the year to kind of like recharge our batteries and come back in technically the second week of January, all ready to go as we start that march, inching ever closer to episode 400.
Does the march start? What episode are we on?
We are on 376.
Oh, yeah. So the march should start. We usually start,
We usually start at
75.
At 75. But then because of the holiday, we thought maybe we'll start like within 15 or 10.
Yeah.
We got to nail it down.
Maybe do 20.
Yeah, maybe 20.
That's probably something we should talk about in a meeting and not during the show. I just started a meeting.
Yeah, hit the gavel.
Right. Yeah, I guess the march has started.
It's started. And we definitely have a couple of some ideas, some special events that we want to pull out. We're going to be doing a special event in January, January 27th at World Cafe Live.
Yes.
To be specific, the lounge at World Cafe Live, when the Michaud Mission will be presenting a film screening of Love Jones. And doing a live podcast right there. Tickets are on sale now at worldcafelive.com. Come out, enjoy Love Jones with us. You know you haven't seen it on a big screen in who knows how long, if you've ever even saw it on a big screen. Now's your time to see it on a big screen and enjoy some wine and food. And Vince and I and Dylan, there'll be a Dylan sighting at World Cafe Live for Love Jones, our live podcast.
Like grainy footage of him walking.
It's just walking
through the woods of the Pacific Northwest. We can have like some anthropologists and scientists on arguing about whether or not he's a hoax. You can see the zipper. You can see the zipper. Does Dylan actually exist?
Here's the funny thing.
It'll be like a dude and it'll say scientist.
Here's the funny thing, though. If you had him in the grainy footage, I actually have a friend named Steve Austin.
Steve Austin.
We could have the $6 million man.
Yeah, just kind of speak on it. Speak on it.
So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, January 27th, the lounge at World Cafe Live. The Michaud Mission presents a film screening of Love Jones, followed by a live podcast. Ticket on sale at worldcafelive.com right now.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right.
I also want to invite you to check out a podcast that has been put out by the company that I, you know, graciously work for. Push Black. We've got a new podcast, a new narrative true crime podcast, The Stolen Girls of Americus. It's all about a true story that happened in 1963 when 15 Black girls were kidnapped from a protest at a movie theater and held captive for 45 days against their will. It's an untold story of racial violence against Black girls, Black women. And it's a story about how these girls rallied together in sisterhood and their mothers did the same to solve this this mystery. It's a 5-part series. It's available wherever you find podcasts right now. All 5 episodes are up and available. And now that all 5 episodes are up, we just began like really promoting it. So we will just kicking it out by word of mouth. But now we just started promoting it. And just last night, we started a promotion. And in less than 24 hours, the podcast is number 65 in the history podcast.
That is fantastic.
Section of Apple. And skyrocketing on up The Stolen Girls of Americus. Please check it out wherever you find podcasts. I'm guaranteeing you will enjoy, and it's a story that needs to be told.
You did some voice work for this, right?
I along with being a producer on the show, I do some voice work.
So if you enjoy Lynn's voice, as we all do, this is another way to hear it.
It'll be interesting because I actually play a white man in the on this.
Hey, you darkies, what are you doing protesting this theater?
Oh,
is that you?
Oh, if only I was just saying darkies.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Lynn, are you using crude language?
Ooh. Ooh.
Lynn Webb.
Texas T.
As you've never heard him before.
That's right. You never heard it like this. Yeah. Woo. So, yeah, it was very traumatic.
All right.
Anyway, so check that out.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get on with it. It's time for us to get into the top 5.
Top 5.
Who's your top 5? My top 5 is top five is...
Top five, ladies and gentlemen, where I come up with a list, I tell Vincent all about it, and then he tells you the first things that come to his mind based on this list. Now, Vincent.
Yes, sir.
Try to keep this in theme.
Thematic.
We're going to be reviewing Candy Cane Lane.
We are.
Which is all about Eddie Murphy's character trying to win contests so that he can provide the best Christmas for his family and get them the gifts that they deserve. And then you watch the film and you find out exactly they had the gifts that they deserved all along.
Which was love. Come on, come on.
So keep it in theme. Yeah. I present to you the top five worst Christmas gifts.
Top five worst Christmas gifts.
Now, this is from a website, boardpanda.com, that sent out a solicitation for people to write in and tell them about the worst gifts that they ever had.
Okay.
Right?
Interesting.
So these, and I think they got something like about 200, 300, like, you know, responses.
So these are actual gifts.
These are actual gifts. But more to the point, these are actual, the story, because sometimes the gift itself
isn't bad.
But it's the story.
It's the story behind it.
It's the story behind it. All right? So... Number five.
And all of this is, these
are the stories. They didn't take the people's names.
Sure,
you
know,
put
sure.
it out there. So number five, right, is a little stuffed angel cherub with pink wings and yarn hair. It was a little Christmas ornament.
Okay.
The story behind this is, the writer says, when I was 8 or 9 years old, my grandma gave me a Christmas ornament.
Okay.
It was a little stuffed cherub with pink cheeks and yarn hair. I cried like crazy because I had saved up my allowance to buy that cherub for her the year before.
Oh, so grandma re-gifted his crappy gift.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's horrible.
That is horrible, but maybe you should have bought grandma a better gift.
He was 8 or 9 years old, Vincent.
I mean, he was old enough to know, like, you when you were 8 or 9 years old, you knew when you liked a gift.
8 or 9 years old. 8 or 9 years old, you say, and he saved up his money to get this Christmas ornament for his grandchild.
My question is, what did he give grandma next year? I bet he gave her a better gift.
I bet he gave her back the ornament.
I bet he didn't.
You don't think that's you think he's
tough love. Tough love. I'm team grandma.
I can't wait till Adam starts buying Christmas gifts. I can't wait.
What's number four?
I'll be right there.
Bring this garbage in here. Give it right back to you. Now what have you learned? Bam.
Number four. A knit scarf.
Knit scarf, okay.
So one year, my mother-in-law asked, nay, demanded, that I knit a scarf for her for Christmas. She was very specific on colors and style and called several times during December to check on the status of it.
What?
She opened it up on Christmas Day and was absolutely delighted with it and immediately put it on. She was very ecstatic. Then she started to hand out her presents. Tons of stuff to the kids, my husband, her other son, and her other daughter-in-law. Nothing for me.
I feel like there's a lot of information missing from this.
Then I heard, oh my God, I forgot presents for you. And I turned around and found that she was talking to my cat. She bought the cat presents. No, I did not get anything. That's bad.
I feel like there's some missing details. details. Like,
what do you mean? Like her mother-in-law
is just a supervillain?
It certainly sounds like it. She's Mother Doom.
Maybe her husband hates her.
What's the husband got to do with it?
Because his mom is giving you nothing.
But the mom begged her to knit her a scarf.
Is she Rumpelstiltskin? No, not Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpelstiltskin was the little magic man.
Yeah, who are you trying to come up with?
I guess the woman who actually did the knitting. What was the woman's name in Rumpelstiltskin?
The woman in Rumpelstiltskin?
Right, because Rumpelstiltskin was...
You're thinking of Rapunzel.
No, Rapunzel has the hair.
Oh. But I thought she knitted the...
Remember old girl had to knit straw into gold, and she didn't. She couldn't. So then she made the deal with the little devil leprechaun man and said, I'll give you my child if I can knit the straw in the gold.
Is that Rapunzel? I mean, is that
Rumpelstiltskin?
That's Rumpelstiltskin.
And then she was like,
oh, so what's
and
the then girl's he was name?
Like, right, who was her name? Because then he was like, if you guess my name, I'll give you your child back. But then she couldn't guess his name because who can guess somebody's name? But then he was doing like a little dance. Ha ha, I'm Rumpelstiltskin. And I got your baby. I think the point is folk tales are weird. What's number three?
Well, now you got me wanting to look up Rumpelstiltskin because I want to find out the woman's name. It doesn't even give her name. It just says that a miller brags to the king and people that he lives in the
claim right, his her daughter. Her father got her jammed up running his mouth.
Yeah. It doesn't give her name.
Damn. It was tough being an unnamed girl in a folktale. Is that a Brothers Grimm tale?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm about to say that feels Brothers Grimmy. All right.
Number three. Was a DVD of the Titanic.
Okay.
Wait for it.
All right.
It was actually a pirated copy.
Okay.
Already seen it before twice. It was not in any type of case. It just had Titanic written in marker on it. So it was just, you know, like.
Right.
At home DVD. It didn't belong to the person who gave it as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And the DVD was scratched and didn't play.
Was the person that gave you the gift addicted to crack cocaine? I just asked the hard-hitting questions. I asked the questions that other people are afraid to ask. I feel like there's crack involved. Because it's a DVD, which, you know, now you know it's the 90s. And all this passing things back and forth. Hey, man, I got a gift for you. This sounds very crackish. Because I thought he was going to say, they gave me the DVD, but then when I went to play the DVD, my DVD player had disappeared. So now you've mixed it with like a O. Henry story and crack.
Number two. The Christmas after my grandmother passed away. My aunt gave us all the various and sundry junk that she cleaned out of my grandma's house as presents, but signed the tags with my grandma's name. So...
It was grandma's garbage from beyond.
So I got a rusty, broken bell ornament from my dead grandma that year.
This is like in the trailer for an A24 film that's coming out next November. But grandma was dead.
When the bell broke. My A24.
Jeez.
Oh, God. Starring Emma Stone.
Right.
Number one. Worst Christmas gift.
They've been pretty bad so far.
Last year, my boyfriend
gave him a heart, and the very next year, he gave it away.
Got me a can of pears. for Christmas.
I mean, does she like pears?
It don't matter.
Pears are delicious. Boom, I rest my case.
Are you serious?
No further questions.
Are you?
No further questions, I rest my case.
A can of pears.
Your Honor, permission to treat the witnesses hostile. Pears are delicious.
Does Wendy like pears?
What's it have to do with Wendy?
Does Wendy like pears?
Yes. You know why? Because pears are delicious.
Okay. I want to see what happens if you show up with a
giving
can
her
of
pears. I'm just
why
saying.
Why not? They're delicious.
They are delicious.
So why can't you give her pears as a gift?
I could if I wanted to. Yeah, I don't think pears are worse than crackhead DVD or ghost ornament.
I don't know. That sounds weird. Worse to me. A can of pears. A can of pears.
They're delicious.
That's the top five, ladies and gentlemen.
Vanilla ice cream. Warm it up a little bit. That's probably got yourself a little something happening.
No. No.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, that's the top five.
All right.
And we're going to keep this moving. We're going to get into 6 degrees of Derville. What's his name?
Derville Martin.
Derville Martin.
That's the key. Why you'd be surprised what a person can do with just a sense of touch and a sense of sound.
Lips are tired.
Oh. Hello.
Nice.
6 degrees of Derville Martin, ladies and gentlemen, where I will give Vincent an actor and he has 6 films or less to connect them to the best Christmas gift ever.
Derville Martin.
Derville Martin.
That's right.
Keeping it in theme, Vincent.
Keeping it in theme.
Number one,
the
famous Eddie.
A famous Eddie.
So it's 6 movies or less.
Mm-hmm.
Connect Derville Martin.
Derville Martin.
To Eddie Redmayne.
What is that? You just making up names? What? You just making up names? Eddie Johassafit. Well, what is that? Is this a real actor?
Yes, it's a real actor.
He's been in things?
Academy Award winning actor.
Let me see his face. Okay. Oh, why do I know him? Whoa, let me see his face again. Yeah. No. Why do I see him in old-timey clothes?
You're about right. Yeah.
Oh, with like a wand. Oh, he's in Harry Potter. Not Harry Potter.
You gotta get it.
The what's the one the prequel, the money grab?
You gotta at least get the first
Fantastic Beast.
There you go.
Okay. Now we got something to work with. Isn't Carmen Ejugu in one of those?
Let's see. Yes.
Right, because I was like, oh, it's a black person in Harry Potter. Okay. Now I got something to work with. All right. What's his name? Eddie what?
Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne. All right, sure. Why not?
So ignorant.
All right, let's just, how are we going to get to Eddie Redmayne?
Yes, Eddie Redmayne.
Redmayne of like the Ohio Redmaynes? Sure, why not? All right. I'll keep it in theme too. I'll keep it in theme too because Derville Martin. How do I want to do this? How am I going to do this? Derville Martin is in. I'm getting a Carmen, and so I'm really going to get to Carmen Ejugu, probably from Sparkle. I'll get to her from Spark. Okay. Oh, here you go. Let's have some fun. So Dervo Martin is in The Final Come Down with Billy Dee Williams. Billy Dee Williams is in Lady Sings the Blues with Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor is in maybe being too cute. Well, Richard Pryor is in Harlem Nights with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy is in, so I've done three. Eddie Murphy.
You're trying to get to Sparkle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Eddie Murphy is in You People with Michael Epps. Mike Epps. Mike Epps is in Sparkle with Carmen Ejiogu, who is in Fantastic Beasts with Eddie
Redmayne.
Eddie Redmayne, which is an actual real person.
He is a real person.
I know he is.
He won an Academy Award for portraying a real person.
What's that?
He portrayed Stephen Hawking in the My Theory of Everything.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that?
No, I did see that.
Did you?
No, I did see it.
Did you?
I did.
Really?
I did.
Did you?
I did. I did see it. I had to think about it. I did see it. It was okay.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, there you go. Do I have another famous Eddie?
No.
Do I have another famous Eddie?
You don't have a famous Eddie. Next up is a famous Murphy.
Oh.
I did there. So in six movies or less. It's
a famous Murphy.
Connect Dervo Martin. To Cillian Murphy.
Oh, Cillian Murphy. Okay. Well, Cillian Murphy, you get him a couple of ways because he's Scarecrow in y'all's Chris Nolan's Batman. But I like him better in the Chris Nolan film that I really like.
Oppenheimer?
No. Inception.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Inception. So this is how we'll get to him. So Dervo Martin is in Five on a Black Hands Out with Dick Anthony Williams. Dick Anthony Williams is in The Jerk with Steve Martin. Steve Martin is in a movie that we're gonna watch in January because I got to wash all this terrible Eddie Murphy taste out of my mouth.
So we're gonna watch Norbit.
No, we're gonna watch Bowfinger, which he's in with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy is in Coming to America with Samuel Jackson, who is in Django Unchained with Leo DiCaprio, who is in Inception with Cillian Murphy. Yeah. I like him.
Oh, I do.
Oh, I like Cillian Murphy. I can't really do Peaky Blinders.
I know you said you can't.
Yeah, I just didn't. Hey, maybe I'll try it again. I mean, should I try it again? Do you like it?
I liked it. I finished it. I love the series.
Is it over?
Yeah, it's over.
How did they do with the ending?
I think they did okay at the ending, but I also think they stayed 1 year too long.
My nephew really liked Peaky Blinders. I just could not get into it.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I did enjoy it. I like Peaky Blinders.
I like that Cillian Murphy.
Oh, Cillian Murphy is.
He's all right.
He's good, man. Very good. There you go.
Very nice.
And now let's get to the most famous Eddie Murphy of them all.
Yes, yes.
As we get into our review of Candy Cane Lane.
Yes, yes. All right, here we go. Candy Cane.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
Everybody listen, this is important. I'm gonna show you guys something. And when I show you what I'm gonna show you, don't freak out. I can explain.
It's magic!
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
High stakes as neighbors compete for best decorated house on the block.
I think this is the house to beat.
Wow. What's your Christmas wish?
I just want to win this thing. I'll take it.
Signature, please. Ignore all the fine print. It's like you're signing your life away. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Oh, it will be.
Rise and shine, naughty boy.
What the hell is all of this?
Something's happening.
Good morning, sir.
Are you real?
We all were, until we fell into that elf sick trap.
You made your wish. You're in it now.
I didn't sign on for this.
You literally signed on for this.
You gotta read the fine print, man. The terms of service are brutal.
Say goodbye to your dad.
Why are y'all dressed like Prince?
We're not going to let her turn your dad into one of those weird Happy Meal toys. No offense, I'm sorry.
None taken.
A little taken.
We are the Carvers. We got to catch an elf.
You messed with the wrong family!
We should split up.
What do you mean we should split up? Have you never watched a horror film? If you split up, somebody dies. Have you ever died?
Oh?
It is not fun.
That's true. I'd never died, but Mom knows. I didn't know you'd die before. Let's go find these rings.
Is that who I think it is?
Oh my God! Black Santa!
New Santa with black, man!
A man is determined to win his neighborhood's annual Christmas decorating contest. He makes a pact with an elf to help him win. And the elf casts a spell that brings the 12 days of Christmas to life, which brings unexpected chaos to town. That is the synopsis of Candy Cane Lane, a new film out for the holidays on Amazon Prime and starring one Eddie Murphy, Tracy Ellis Ross, Janaea Walton, Thaddeus Mixon, and Madison Thomas as the Carver family, a family that is, boy, they are steeped in Christmas. And we're going to tell you all about it in Vincent's selection for tonight's stop on the Michaud Mission. Vincent, this film was directed by Reginald Hudlin.
Yes.
What do you have to say about Candy Cane Lane?
I guess the first thing to say about Candy Cane Lane is that I was not disappointed.
Okay.
Because what I always say is disappointment implies expectation. And I had no expectations for this film whatsoever. If we include Dolomite Is My Name,
mm-hmm.
This is now Eddie Murphy's fourth streaming service outing.
Okay.
In film. You know, after Dolomite Is My Name, we had Coming to America,
mm-hmm.
the sequel to the classic film Coming to America. And of course, You People.
Oh yes, okay.
Last year. And as good as Dolomite As My Name was, the returns diminished very quickly afterwards.
On the subsequent films, yes.
I think, you know, Coming to America had a lot of problems. And frankly, the biggest problem was Eddie Murphy's energy that he brought to it. We talked about on the show all of the talent that was squandered in Talk to Me. I mean, You People.
And You People.
But besides this carrying on this unfortunate pattern of lackluster results from Eddie Murphy, there's really no nice way to say what I'm about to say. I don't understand how this film got made.
Really? Okay.
Dolomite is my name. Passion Project. The passion, the energy, everything about Dolomite is my name. You 100% understand how Eddie Murphy sold this to Netflix, and then you get this wonderful film. Coming to America, even during the interview sessions, or rather that interview cycle where Eddie Murphy was talking, Eddie Murphy talked about it's a classic film. People have been asking him to do a sequel to Coming to America since Coming to America came out.
Right.
So, you know, I understand how you sell Coming to America to Amazon.
It was pre-sold.
You People, Kendra Barris is a pretty hot name. He's coming off of the Black-ish universe. You've got Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Eddie Murphy. Again, I understand that. There is nothing about this film. There is nothing about this film that makes me understand why Eddie Murphy wanted to be involved with it. As you said, he plays this character, Chris, who loves Christmas. This is the extent of what we are told about why he just loves Christmas. He's got this very, speaking of Kenya Barris, this very sort of cookie cutter, by the numbers, almost sitcom family.
Not almost.
With Tracy Ellis Ross, who, you guys can just cut and paste this because I'm going to say this about every cast member almost in this film, is utterly wasted. Like, I was so confused by Tracy Ellis Ross playing a character that she basically played for 7 years. Not well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's, you know, she plays his wife, and there's no chemistry.
None.
There's no energy between them. Tracy Ellis Ross could have been played by a cardboard cutout of Tracy Ellis Ross. Eddie Murphy's character gets fired, which has no real bearing on the overall plot.
Nope.
He's just fired. But he loves Christmas. They live on one of these streets where people argue or people kind of compete with each other for bragging rights.
Right, for Christmas decoration
bragging
rights.
You know, we have the best Christmas decorations.
Mm-hmm.
His main rival played by Ken Marino.
Yeah.
A comedic actor whose work I have enjoyed for years, who completely wasted in this film. He's, you know, he's in 4 or 5 scenes, but he might not have been there. He might as well have not been there.
Yeah, yeah.
Long story short, and this really is a long story short, Eddie Murphy's character, Chris, becomes super invested in winning the Christmas light, the Christmas decoration contest, ends up going to a mysterious shop.
Right.
Where he basically sells his soul to what we find out is a rogue elf. And missionaries, let me just tell you, this description of her as a rogue elf is more exciting than anything that this character Pepper played by Jillian Bell. Another comedic actress whose work I have enjoyed, but Are you ready, Lynn? It's completely squandered in this film. Eddie Murphy realizes that the deal that he makes with her, or rather, Chris realizes a deal that he makes with this rogue elf to have the best decorations. He's basically sold his soul, and he's going to turn into an animated figure, like a figurine.
Like glass.
If he doesn't get the five rings from the song, from the 12 Days of Christmas song, you know, the five golden rings, and he'll be turned into this animated figurette that she already has collected. The figures that she's collected, the three people that stand out, Chris Redd from Saturday Night Live, who I have to say, Chris Redd, bless his little heart, does the best he can
do. Yes.
Robin Thede.
Yeah.
Of the Black Lady Sketch Show, who I love, is so squandered. It took me 45 minutes before I realized it was Robin Thede.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I know her voice, so I know it like.
And Nick Offerman, who I love, who I didn't know it was Nick Offerman until the film went off.
I know. That is 100% true. It's 100% true.
High jinx. Well, middle jinx. Well, low jinx ensue. At some point, David Alan Greer shows up, as everyone has said, as Santa Claus. It boggles my mind that you can have David Alan Greer and Eddie Murphy in scenes together, and it's boring.
I'm not laughing.
I don't even know how you pull this off. And again, I just don't understand how this came together, because Reginald Hudlin is a very seasoned director at this point. I know the easy thing to say is that, you know, well, maybe Eddie Murphy is over the hill. Maybe he's lost it. Maybe, you know, I think that's sort of the easy answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only reason I hesitate to say that is because my favorite aspect, as I just mentioned a moment ago, my favorite aspect of these new Eddie Murphy vehicles is that Eddie Murphy goes on the talk show circuit.
Yeah.
And he is effortlessly charming and funny every time he is on a talk show. He was on the
Jimmy Kimmel.
The Jimmy Kimmel show a couple of weeks ago. Team Michelle, we sent that clip back and forth where Eddie Murphy just sat on a sofa for that segment was 50. Do you realize that segment was 15 minutes? A 15-minute segment of Eddie Murphy just sitting in a chair talking.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was over, I was like, oh, don't cut the commercial. Please, Eddie Murphy, please just talk some more. But I don't know what is going on with Eddie Murphy in front of the camera over the past 4 or 5 years. I just do not understand it. Is there anything about this film that I liked? As I mentioned, Chris Redd, I think, does the best he can. And I kind of give Chris Redd as much credit as I give anyone. Jillian Bell as Pepper is not enough to save this movie.
No.
But I like her when she's on.
Okay.
Daniel Pinnock. Daniel Pinnock plays so again, the neighborhood is embroiled in this contest. There's a local, I guess they're local cable show. It's like news personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays one of the hosts, and she has this wonderful chaotic energy that I actually was waiting for a third act reveal where she was also a rogue elf, because she is doing her own thing.
That's true.
And I wanted to know more about the thing she was doing. But besides that, this movie just made me sad.
Wow.
Like, I was just sad by the end of it.
Yeah, I I wish I cared enough about it to be sad, but I don't. I too was disappointed by the. You're right. To say that you're disappointed denotes that you had expectations,
right.
And I didn't really have any expectations of the film. And I do remember the clip that we sent around about Eddie Murphy on Jimmy Kimmel, and he was funny on Jimmy Kimmel. However, what I also noticed on his appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, that Eddie Murphy has slipped into almost the old raconteur vibe.
Okay.
You know, like when he goes on these shows, first of all, he's going on these shows with almost all of the hosts are younger, much younger than him.
Right. And they're in awe of him.
So they're in awe of him.
Yeah.
Right. When I was young and I used to watch, the Johnny Carson show,
mm-hmm.
right. Jack Benny would go on his show. Jack Benny is a huge comedian from the early part, from the 40s and 50s, ladies and gentlemen. Huge. And he was Johnny Carson's hero.
Yeah.
And by the time Johnny Carson in the 70s was doing the show, Jack Benny was, he was on the other side of his career.
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing, you know, Las Vegas shows, or whatever. But whenever he went on that show, you could see that Johnny Carson was just, I'm here in front of Jack Benny. It didn't matter how often he was. And that's how all of these guys, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, all of them, this is Steve Colbert, this is how they all look at Eddie Murphy. And rightfully so.
Sure, sure, he's earned that.
He has earned his laurels in that way. But he has also slipped into that gear.
Mm-hmm.
And that gear that you saw during that appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, because while we shared the clip about the story that he tells, because he tells this great story about dating Lola Falana.
I only date with Lola Falana.
If you really watch it again, the facts of the story are funny.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not really delivering the story.
Interesting.
He's kind of just... He's right. telling it, and because the facts are funny, you're like, oh my God.
Right.
But he's just like, yeah, well, you know.
Right.
And that is his, the mode that he's slipped into. He was energized for Dolomite Is My Name. Cause like you said, that was a passion project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a passion project, but it was also the project by which he sensed this is going to also kind of like, let people know that I still got it
right
a bit. So he had something to prove.
If I decide to actually lace up my shoes.
Right. You know, because remember the talk coming out of Dolomite was that, okay, now that I've done that, now I'm going to get back on stage. I'm going to go do some shows, you know, the get set up for a big comedian return. That never happened.
No.
Because he fell right into that groove, man. He fell right into that groove after it. Because after Dolomite is My Name, they threw money at him. You've been talking about coming to America. Let's make it happen. The pandemic was, you know, looking like it was bubbling up. We need something that can happen. You can knock this out in a couple of weeks. Sure.
Yeah.
And he's been in that mode ever since You People and all the way down to Candy Cane Lane, where Candy Cane Lane is him not trying to relive classic Eddie Murphy. He's trying to just relive the Family Guy Eddie Murphy moment in his life, because he did have that time in his life when he was Dr. Doolittle and he was doing films of that nature for the family. He's just trying to like tap into that.
But
vibe.
At least he had energy in Dr.
But I'm saying he's trying to tap into that.
Yeah.
But you can't when you he does not get out of gear, man. You
really
can
doesn't.
And you can see, and the unfortunate thing is you could see him forcing it a little bit. There are moments when he tries to force it and it just doesn't go. There's nothing there.
No, there isn't.
There's absolutely nothing there. So when you've got Eddie Murphy as your lead, which means that he is going to be invaded on almost 85% of the scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
And he's stuck in like third gear.
I was going to say second.
Well, just second.
Yeah, he's really puttering along.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, oh man. It's so now everybody else, Chris Redd, you're right. Pops off the screen in a little form.
Right.
But he does work. To be honest, it doesn't help that this script is badly written. But more than that, it is stuffed with plot. There's so much. He gets fired. Tracy Ellis Ross possibly has a promotion, but based on whether or not she can schmooze some
account. Son is a tuba player that's failing math.
They're failing math. They don't really like his music. The daughter doesn't want to go to UFC. She's a track star, but she wants to go to Notre Dame. The little girl maybe is losing the spirit of Christmas. The $3 Alec Baldwin brother, stepbrother across the street, who's his rival, you know, there's supposed to be some big rivalry. That doesn't really go anywhere because he leaves the movie for a moment.
And then maybe we're going to get money from the contest, but then come to find out there's no money involved in the contest.
Right. And you learn that before the end of the, way before the end of the movie.
His prizes and tacos.
So now you've lost any interest in that.
Yeah.
You know, he buys the ornaments, the stuff from the elf. And then that goes awry. And just to show you how dumb this movie is, there's a scene where you see that dude's house has an alarm system. And it looks like an elaborate alarm system. Yet the elf comes walking into the house to talk to the little figures, real life glass figures that he stole from her store, and say, "Y'all coming back with me?" Well, you know what? On second thought, no, you're not. And then she leaves. What? What is happening? There's so much is stuffed in this film. It makes absolute sense that Reginald Hudlin, a seasoned director, he don't even know where to point his camera half the time in this movie. And the thing is, I actually just listened to a review of this film from some people that review Christmas films. So they're all in gear
for Christmas movies.
Yeah, this is their thing.
They're Christmas people.
And when they reviewed this, and I listened to their review before I watched it, because it was the last week, and they liked the movie. So I'm like, okay, so maybe on just a silly Christmas movie level, this movie works. And that's all I'm going in to this film for. It doesn't even work on that level because the story is so hackneyed and the lessons learned are so forced in at the end.
In one of his interviews, Eddie Murphy talked about he wanted to have a film that basically would be a classic film.
That would be that like a return to.
And he actually name checked something like Elf.
Elf, exactly, which is.
But you think about something like Elf, which is really kind of a silly movie.
Yes, it is.
But A.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell is balls to the wall in that thing.
And at the height of his powers.
At the height of his powers.
That's the other thing to remember.
B, there is a bit of melancholy in there. Like you know, he's been, does he get kidnapped? Or like they kind of send him back?
Yeah, I think they send him back or something like that, yeah.
Send him back so he has to reconnect with his family. Like, there are real stakes. Christmas Story. For all of the talk of Christmas Story, like he... like, it's bloody.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the gun. And it's like, you know, there's heft in a lot of these movies.
Yes. Which you always need to balance against.
John McClane ain't even had no shoes on. He's crawling over glass. So for a Christmas movie, it's got to have. Look, it's so funny we've gone down this route, because I read an essay about It's a Wonderful Life a couple of weeks ago, and the essay rightfully pointed out that because so many people haven't actually watched It's a Wonderful Life,
mm-hmm.
like from beginning to end, like you just see like that last little moment where he comes home and the bell rings and, oh, daddy, you know, and it's like that kind of saccharine sweet. People don't understand. That's just like the last half hour. This is a film about a man who is actively trying to commit suicide.
Yes. Yeah.
And the angel is trying to convince him not to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is a real debate.
Yeah.
For like an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the angel shows him things. He's like, okay, but I still want to kill myself.
Yeah. There's a reason why A Christmas Carol lends itself so easily to horror. Because
Christmas Carol,
it is a scary AF film.
Something like Scrooged, which in my mind is the best adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, okay.
But it is. It's dark.
It's very, very.
You gotta have stakes.
You gotta have the stakes. But you also have to, if you want it to be classic, there's got to be. You've got to cut out the story, like all these mindless like limbs. You need to cut this bare bones. Elf is the story of Elf.
Right.
Christmas Story, actually, when you watch that movie, it's a bunch of like vignettes that happen. Yeah. But the central theme, right,
the through line
is the gift. It's the wagon. This movie.
Gun.
I mean, the gun. Right. Yeah. This movie. Everything is like up here and they try to pay off everything. And right. It's just,
like you just sold your soul for Christmas decorations.
That's enough.
You are about to lose your life and be consigned to the body horror mm-hmm. of being a living doll.
That's it. Let's go. That's all you need. And quiet and skeptic, you didn't need three kids.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't at all. I don't know, right, maybe the one little girl.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a lot of ways, I don't like reviews like this, because this is the type of review where we could just sit here and point to all of the missteps, the misfires. Mm-hmm. The badly executed aspects of this film.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it got to the point I was just happy to see something that I really did like Danielle Pinnock. Like her as this, you know, she slipped her son in here somehow. And
yeah, she was cute. She got a little grating on me.
Oh, I liked her.
But she was cute.
She was a lifeline for me. And then when she said, oh, I didn't mention that the $100,000 is going to be paid in tacos. I said, see, that's the kind of chaos I'm looking for.
I liked her partner in that, Timothy Simons.
I liked him bouncing off of this mad person
mm-hmm.
that somehow his agent has signed him up to be sitting in here with her.
I know.
Like you said, I went to the Columbia School of Journalism.
I liked him.
Yeah.
I liked him. And I will say, I really didn't laugh in this movie, except when the six geese are laying
mm-hmm.
and you just see them firing eggs out of their boom, boom from the air. Boom, 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 boom. That
made you laugh?
It made me laugh.
That made me sad, because this was a wonderful opportunity for physical humor from Tracee Ellis Ross.
And yeah,
who again is wasted. For 7 years, she showed she could very much be a physical comedian on Black-ish. I don't know how you give Tracee Ellis Ross an opportunity to jump around and act silly, and she doesn't.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right.
I wasn't even sad. I was just confused.
Speaking of confusion, would you recommend Candy Cane Lane?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't, and it pains
me. It feels bad to say it that, right? Because like you said, it's the type of review you don't like doing, because I also recognize that there is a wide swath of our audience, or the audience in general, that is going to watch this movie, especially on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And it's just going to sit there and just, you know,
look,
enjoy it for what it is.
Watch Jingle Jangle again. It's always time for Jingle Jangle.
Yeah, well, because it's always time for Nigga Noni Rose.
It's always time. Nigga Noni Rose isn't even in it that much.
But enough.
But she said. No. You know I love Jingle Jangle.
No. I did like Jingle Jangle. Yeah. So yeah. Watch Jingle Jangle.
Watch Jingle Jangle
again. But
and The Preacher's Wife.
The Preacher's Wife.
Another film with like we were thinking about that. Like, you know, I mean, you know, obviously the plot is from The Bishop's Wife.
Right.
But still, it's like, you understand this is a movie about an angel who's trying to steal this man's wife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This man who has committed the sin of trying to help people. It's pretty dark.
I know. So, Eddie, I have to say, the search continues, my friend, for your classic Christmas movie.
I mean, besides Trading Places.
Well, you're right.
There you go. There you go. Watch Jingle Jangle. Watch Trading Places.
And?
Watch A Preacher's Wife.
There's your Christmas.
There's your Christmas right
there's
there.
Your Christmas. All right? And he's talking to you, Eddie. You watch Jingle Jangle, Trading Places, and...
Do you think Eddie has seen a complete cut of this film? Me either.
No.
Me either. I get the sense... I do think Eddie Murphy is a consummate professional.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's where he's supposed to be. He shoots what he's supposed to shoot. But yeah, I don't see Eddie Murphy watching
this. Yeah, I don't think this... like kept him,
yeah,
got him out of his trailer much.
Right. Well, again, and after it's done, you know.
Next.
Yeah.
All right. So that is our review of Candy Cane Lane, ladies and gentlemen. Before we tell you that we're reviewing Friday After next week, I invite you to follow the Michelle Mission on the social media of your choice, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter or Twixix, whatever it is. Instagram and Facebook at Michelle Mission. You can also subscribe to the Michelle Mission on YouTube at Michelle Mission, where you can hit the bell, be notified when we have new videos going up. We actually put up a video of our review of Boxing Day, and our review of Othello went up, and a top five when we broke down what films certain actors should delete from their resume. Mm. So that video went up, and there'll be more videos going up over the next couple of weeks, because I've got time now. So that's what we're going to be doing. The Michelle Mission is also a proud member of The Podglomerate, thepodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work. They're the podcast network that we have been proud to be called home for now over 6 years. They picked us up in our very first year and have been with us every step of the way. So shout out to Jeff and all of the team at Podglomerate. Hope you guys are enjoying your holiday. The Michelle Mission is also filmed live from Yonkchunk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk. You can hit up Dylan at yunkjunk.com. That's D-Y-L-A-N at yunkjunk.com to book your time in one of the fabulous studios that we have here. Shout out to Dylan and to Terry and all the guys and gals at Yunk Junk. Thank you for making this our video home for the Michaud Mission. If you have thoughts and concerns, please email us at michaudmission@gmail.com so that we can check it out and perhaps your email will be read here on air. Subscribe to the Michaud Mission also wherever you find podcasts, whether it be Apple, Spotify. It doesn't matter if you find a you get a podcast there, Pandora, you know, tune in iHeartRadio. The Michaud Mission is there. Like it and follow us, subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple because that really helps people find our show. Next week, we buried the lead. We are going to be closing out the year of 2023 with the review of a film that I bet you didn't know was a Christmas film. I didn't know until I looked up Christmas films and I said, lo and behold, Friday After Next is a Christmas film. I've never seen it, and I can't wait to watch it and review it with you next week here on the Michaud Mission. Till then, he's Vincent. I'm Len. Get well, Ariel. And in parting, we say,
we'll see you when it's time to meet again.
The Michaud Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams and edited by Len Webb with co-production by Mo Poplar, music by Alexa Gold, and filmed at the Video Content Factory. The Michaud Mission is a proud member of the Podglomerate Podcast Network.